Good morning, everyone. I hope all of you had a good time at the attendee party last night. Did everyone have a good time?
Yeah,
that's awesome. My name is Shyam Narayan, and I'm a Premier Field Engineer with Microsoft. And my core focus technologies in my role is SharePoint Server. I work with the Enterprise Search Platform and the Developer Stack. In my role, I basically work with on-site with customers, and I focus on technical best practices and operational best practices to maintain good platform hygiene. That is a premier booth in the expo hall, and I would recommend you come down and speak to some engineers to see what we do in our role. Just a quick show of hands, how many of you attended a session yesterday morning which introduced the new app model for Office and SharePoint? Oh, quite a few. Thanks for coming back to the session. This session basically extends on the previous session. We're going to be diving a bit deeper into how we go about building apps within SharePoint. And also we look under the cover at the new platform enhancements and new components that make app development a very strong paradigm in SharePoint 2013. Okay, clicked over, it's good. When I was putting the deck together, I had a lot of fun, and I tried to frame what are we going to cover in the session. Predominantly, we're going to be focused on the three app models and how do we go about hosting them within SharePoint or externally. But we're going to start off talking about application identity in SharePoint. So we're going to spend a bit of time initially on it. App identity in SharePoint 2013 is a very, very deep topic and warrants a session on its own. So we're going to stay at a pretty high level, just enough to have a good grounding on the concepts so we can see how they're leveraged throughout the app models. We're then going to spend the rest of the session talking about the app models, starting off with the SharePoint-hosted apps. We will then move into the auto-hosted apps, which is a really cool model for development, and finally wrap things up with the S2S or provider-hosted apps. Just a quick note, this is a level 400 session, so we're going to be fairly technical throughout the session, and there's a lot of content to get through. So I would really appreciate if we could park all the questions to the end. I will make sure we have some time to answer the question, and I will be available after the session as well to answer questions. That would be great. And I hope you've had your dose of caffeine hit, because we're going to be requiring this for the session. Let's get into it. So app identity in SharePoint 2013. Now, I've been speaking to a lot of customers and developers since the beta has come out, and a question that I keep getting asked is, why do we need app identity? Now, we already have user identities. Why have we introduced app identities in SharePoint 2013? And to answer that question, we really need to look back at the development models in MOS 2007 and SharePoint 2010. In the previous versions of SharePoint, any custom code you wrote basically ran under the context of the user. With the full trust farm solutions, developers could elevate privileges and get tasks done that the user was actually not authorized to do. And the traceability around this elevation of privileges wasn't very great. We also had the sandbox model, which was very restrictive. So essentially, in the previous model, you basically had two choices. Go with the full trust farm solutions and lose out on traceability, or be restricted by the sandbox. SharePoint 2013 and app identities solve those problems. So application identities in SharePoint 2013 basically means apps now have, or custom code you write now has, a unique identity independent of the user. Not only do these apps have independent identities, we can permission them separately from the user. What that means is, most of us have got smartphones. When we install apps on them, I installed an app probably a week ago, it came up and demanded for permission, saying, I need to access location services on your mobile for this app to work, and had to basically approve or granted those privileges. The SharePoint 2013 app model essentially allows us to do that. So when a user now installs an app into SharePoint, he or she is going to be essentially asked to approve certain permission demands made by the app. So as an example, when I'm installing an app into SharePoint, it's going to come up and ask me, I need access to the site collection. I also need access to the user profile service and to the managed metadata or the taxonomy service within SharePoint. Not only these apps can demand these permissions, they can also request the access level to each of these SharePoint services. So as an example, it can say, I need full control to the site collection. I need read-only access to the user profile service. And I need write access to the taxonomy store. So essentially now, we can start honing in on the permissions granted to an app. In the full trust model, essentially the developer had access to the entire SharePoint surface API and could call any of the back-end services. With the new app model, we can restrict that in a very fine-grained and controlled manner. And this is why apps have been introduced in SharePoint 2013. And as we go through the sessions, I will actually show you how we configure permissions using some of the Visual Studio tooling. Any questions before I continue? I saw a lot of you guys had attended the session yesterday on app. What is an app? So I'm just going to quickly recap the session in a minute so that everyone gets on the same page from the perspective of what an app is. The app model was introduced in Office and SharePoint 2013 to essentially have a low touch on the SharePoint server by running all custom code off the box. So you either ran custom code on the client within the browser or on a remote app, on a remote web server. So now none of the actual customization now runs within SharePoint with the app model. We still do support the full trust solutions and the sandbox solutions, but the new model is the recommended way forward. And the reason for doing this is, in full trust solutions, the code essentially ran on the SharePoint server box. In a lot of the cases, we ran within the SharePoint server processes. So if the code wasn't written very efficiently or poorly written, we could have a lot of performance issues, and in some cases, have the entire farm be unavailable. That's a big issue. Also, the tight coupling between custom code and SharePoint makes it really, really hard to manage, maintain, or upgrade SharePoint to the next version. Have you encountered that issue with full trust solutions? Yeah, and that's been a big problem. With the new app model, we essentially decouple SharePoint and the custom code. We are now able to upgrade each of them independently, scale them out independently, without having any major impact on each other. There are still things we need to take into consideration, but the process has become much, much easier. So that's the core value proposition of apps in SharePoint. So we're going to spend time talking about SharePoint-hosted apps, cloud-hosted apps, and provider-hosted apps for the rest of the session. We've got a few demos coming up as well. And if you do have a burning question and I need to explain something better, please feel free to put your hands up. Other than that, we'll try to keep questions at the end. So what are SharePoint-hosted apps? So SharePoint-hosted apps are basically custom code or custom solutions you build in which all the components of the solutions basically get provisioned into SharePoint and is hosted out of SharePoint. And I just said that you can't deploy custom code in this model, but there is a catch to this. You cannot write any server-side code. So all custom code you write has to be in the client using JavaScript. So that's a constraint of the SharePoint-hosted model. You have to write code in the client. The other thing we do is, when we deploy an app into SharePoint, we provision a new isolated web into SharePoint, and this is called as the app web, to provide a clean separation from SharePoint and this new and the app you deploy. Technically, we're still sitting in the same Kotlin database. It's more of a logical separation. And for IT pros in the room, when we build out a SharePoint 2013 farm, we actually need to configure the farm to support apps. And essentially, the configuration is to tell SharePoint how to provision this isolated web. And I'll show you how to do that as well. So SharePoint developers, how many of you are SharePoint developers used to building solutions in SharePoint? Yep. So you would be very comfortable with core SharePoint artifacts, or what you'd call the meat and potatoes of SharePoint, things like content types, lists and libraries, site columns. What about those in the app model? That's good news. That carries forward. Except you can't write custom code. So all SharePoint artifact provisioning is now done declaratively through XML using Camel. I know writing XML is not the best experience, so the tooling team within the product group have actually done.
What about our incredible savers and facial savers?
That's a good question. So with the app model, I'll come back to that. I'll just finish this and I'll come back to that question. So the Visual Studio team and the SharePoint team have worked together to make the developer experience much better. We don't want you to write XML. It's error-prone, hard to manage. So you have tooling built into the SharePoint projects now to actually provision these things using GUIs. I'll show you how to do that as well. The next thing I want to talk about is, and this is true for all app models, is when do you pick the right app model? How do you know what is the right app model to pick for your solution? And the way I would look at it is, with the SharePoint specific app or the SharePoint hosted apps, I would look at, these are apps that extend the native functionality of SharePoint. If you have something that's highly transactional and requires batch processing, you probably are looking at the other app models. This is something that's more lightweight, adding on to SharePoint apps. And all content provision is stored in the SharePoint content databases. So if you need a scaled out database, if you need a high transaction, it's recommended to go with the other options where you get access to dedicated databases. And finally, this is supported on both on-prem and SharePoint Online as part of Office 365. So you have good parity between on-prem and Office 365. Just coming back to your questions, did everyone get the question? So you asked about feature receivers, event receivers in SharePoint hosted apps. Unfortunately, you can't write feature receivers in SharePoint hosted apps, but what we do provide is something called as remote event receivers. That's a new concept in 2013, which allows you to basically register an event with a remote web server, and SharePoint basically calls into it. So you can handle your business logic on a remote server, and we'll give you a call in to that remote server. So again, we're adding code off the box. So that is a way to do that, and I'll show you when we get into Visual Studio. Okay, I've told you we're going to be writing code on the client. You know, so how many of you like to write JavaScript? Oh, a few. I was more a statically typed IntelliSense sort of dude, but I'm now moving on over to the client side scripting, and I've seen the light. So in 2010, we introduced the CSOM model, or the client side object model, for the first time, and it essentially was a WCF endpoint, which was exposed by the client service element. And you used managed endpoints to get to it. You had a JavaScript endpoint, you had a library for Silverlight, and a managed .NET runtime through which you would call into the service. There was no way to directly talk to the client service in SharePoint 2010. With the 2013 model, we've actually made the service RESTful. So you can now directly call the service using REST notation. And you can ask data to be returned either in JSON or XML. Did we stop there? Actually, there's a lot of good news with the client-side object model. I told you we're using client-side code to talk to SharePoint. The 2013 model only exposed the SharePoint Foundation API to us, so we could talk to lists, libraries, webs, site collection. That was the limit. In SharePoint 2013, we've included the server-side API for the entire SharePoint server. So that's now available as part of your client-side object model. What that means is, from the client, you can now call into backend services such as user profile, enterprise search, BCS, publishing, document management. You can start using them from the client. And now you go, okay, now I get it. Client-side object model with the server API, we can start doing a lot of things. And this is available across all app models, not only in SharePoint hosted model, it's available in the cloud hosted and the provider hosted model. Okay, I think enough of me talking. Let me just show you a few things now. Let's have the cool transition. There you go. Okay, I'm just going to jump into Visual Studio 2012. So if you go out to dev.office.com, there are tools available which you can download and install. So you need to install this additional tool. It comes down as part of the web platform installer. And once you install that, you get a new node in your choice, language choice, called as apps. I'm going to pick SharePoint apps, apps for SharePoint 2013. And the first thing that comes up is provide me a name for your app. Which site do you want to use for debugging locally? And what type of model or hosting model do you want to pick? So it's a nice wizard which sets it up for you. There's been some work done on this as well. In the 2010 model, we needed to be on a SharePoint box to develop SharePoint solutions. With 2013, you can now effectively develop off the box. So you can basically develop on a Win8 machine and publish out to SharePoint. So you don't need to carry around those 20 kilo VMs or machines anymore. So I'm going to pick SharePoint hosted. And basically for the other models, we pick the other option. Just wait that load. And what I wanted to show you is just a quick walkthrough. I've got a solution that I've written. I don't want to write JavaScript on a big screen. I'm still learning. If you hone in on the solution, basically it's created a pages subfolder. It's created scripts subfolder for me. So it's setting up a solution structure which we can follow. So it's provisioned a page for me called as default.axpx without the code behind file. If you try to insert a script block in there, you're still going to be denied access. I keep getting asked this, can I put a script block in there? No. There's a parser that runs through, and you will be denied. We also have scripts. And there's a pattern shown in this with the template which shows you how to get reference to the context web in JavaScript and call into it. There's heavy dependency on jQuery in SharePoint 2013, and you'll see that throughout this session. I spoke about provisioning SharePoint apps and not SharePoint artifacts and not requiring to write XML. So what we've done, if you go in and say add new item, we've got a menu coming up saying pick what SharePoint artifact do you want to deploy. So I can pick lists, remote event receivers to answer your question. I can provision content types, site columns, all the SharePointy things that we're used to working with. You can provision them through CAML without needing to write a lot of XML. So it makes the developer much more productive. Another really interesting thing that's sitting in here is the app manifest. So the app manifest is basically an XML file which gets provisioned into the content database, and it's this file that tells SharePoint what permissions this app needs. Other than providing some metadata like what's the app name, what's the app icon, this is primarily where you will manage permissions for your app. It's a bit small. So I'm just going to drop that down and zoom in on it. So those essentially are the permissions your app can now demand. So it can say, I need access to BCS or to a specific list or to the social capabilities in SharePoint 2013. I'm just going to pick taxonomy as a demo. And you get permissions against them. You can either say, in this case, it's read or write. Every different capability has got a different set of permissions associated with it. It's documented on the dev.office.com site, and I would recommend you just go through this documentation. I'm going to pick write, and that allows me to set. So when I install this app into SharePoint, the first thing it's going to do is prompt me and say, this app needs write access to the taxonomy store. Are you okay with it? And you go accept or deny. I'll close the solution down, and I'll open up something I've built earlier. Okay, this is basically an application that uses REST to talk back to SharePoint. We'll just quickly F5 run it, and I'll walk you through what the app does. I just want to show you the manifest. We've got taxonomy permissions. We want read permissions to the taxonomy store. So what we should be seeing is when this app runs and comes up, it should demand for that permission. And I said we can develop off the SharePoint box. This is the reason, because we're just provisioning these XML files into SharePoint. There is nothing, and we only use the client object model. So we don't depend on the local assemblies anymore. Okay, so that's come up. You can see it's asked me that I need read permissions to enterprise managed metadata service. As an end user using it, I can say trusted. It's going to go install the app and make it available in my SharePoint site. I'm just going to click into it. So that's what happened on page load. Was essentially we called back asynchronously to SharePoint and asked for data, and we've rendered it out using JavaScript. We've also provisioned a list declaratively over here just to show you we can still provision lists and libraries. And the really interesting list I've got here is the movies list. So probably might take a couple of seconds for it to load up. And what I want from you guys is to tell me where this data is coming from. So once it loads up, it's fairly obvious once it loads up. Can anyone have a crack at where this data is coming from? Netflix? Yeah, it's basically coming from Netflix. So what we've done here is essentially deployed an isolated external content type into SharePoint without needing to touch any farm configuration. So I have not gone into the service application and made any configuration. So tooling now allows you to provide external content types even for SharePoint-hosted solutions declaratively. So that allows you to now build solutions where you can actually reach out, get data from SQL Server or from external sources and mix it up with SharePoint. That's opening up the SharePoint capabilities without requiring to go back to the farm. So I'll just quickly show you. You can add a new customer, some funky JavaScript to make it look pretty. There's an update at times. I'm sure it's written back to the list. There you go. It's in there. It's added to the customer list. So it's a very simple solution just to show you the capabilities of what we can do with the client-side object model. An interesting thing that I wanted to show you was the actual URL to the site. It's a funny-looking URL. I actually deployed my site to HTTP SP app dev, but I've been sent off to HTTP app some number dot apps.com dot apps.bingtip.com. So what is that? So that's essentially the isolated app that's been provisioned for us. And how did we get there? So that's where the farm configuration is required to support apps on your farm. And this is essentially done through central administration. So for all IT pros, if you want users to have apps on their machine, you need to build, as part of your build process, go provision certain service applications so you can support apps. I'm going to show you how that's done. I'm going to stop there. Close that down. So in central administration, so we've introduced a new service application in 2013 called as the App Management Service Application. So we need to ensure the actual service is running. So that's the App Management Service that's running. And also the SharePoint Foundation Subscription Setting Service. Do everyone know what the subscription setting service does? Okay. This is the service that enables multi-tenancy. So if you have been predominantly on-premise, you wouldn't have used this service. But for hosting apps, we need to ensure the service is turned on. Then we go into service applications, and we need to ensure the app management service application has been created, and the setting service application has been created and provisioned. So it's a very simple service application to provision. Just requires a database name and the actual service account under which it needs to run. It's a fairly simple service application to provision. You don't need to do any post configuration for the service app like Search or any of the other apps. Once that's done, we have this new node called as apps where we can go in and configure the app URLs. So if you remember our URL, it was HTTP app. That's what we call as the app prefix. And we have the app domain, which is apps.wingtip.com, which was the tailing end of the actual URL. We also need to do one more thing to ensure we get routed to the correct SharePoint server when we go out to that domain. So we need to add a DNS entry to your DNS server. In this case, I've just added a wildcard DNS lookup, so basically saying anything at wingtip.com, send it back to my server. That's how I get routed correctly. If you are in a server farm configuration with a hardware load balancer in between, that IP is basically needs to point to the hardware load balancer. And once it's in SharePoint, the app management service and the setting subscription service can route you to the right web. Any questions? Has anyone tried this before and got it working? Okay.
Is the suffix always the same, so you can just say name for it if you
want to? Oh, yes, you could add a CNAME for that. So the prefix is always the same, so that's no, you can't change that. So you can when you're building out your farm, you can have, pick any name, but when you go into Office 365, it's actually your tenant name that becomes your prefix. And your suffix is always .sharepoint.com. Just flick back to the desk. Just want to quickly recap what we covered. You know, we looked at a high level the actual Visual Studio solution. You know, we'll look at more Visual Studio in the next few app models. We looked at how to provision or build out your farm to support apps. It's extremely important that we get that right. You can script the entire process out. And once you start doing it, you can consistently start getting it right. We also looked at the client-side investments, like the APIs that have been exposed, external content types in a SharePoint isolated web without any farm configuration, and this gives you a sense of things we can do with SharePoint on the client. Now we're going to move on to what we call as auto-hosted apps. And this is a really, really cool model. How many of you attended the keynote? Yeah. So you saw Jason Silva speak about being how good it's being awestruck. So you need to be awestruck once in a while, and it's good for you. I had that moment when I first worked with the cloud-hosted or the auto-hosted app. So what's auto-hosted apps all about? Auto-hosted apps are basically the app model that's supported in Office 365. It's not for on-prem development. It's only for Office 365. And the reason for this is because there has been some work done to integrate Office 365 with Windows Azure. And with that, what we get is what we got with SharePoint hosted model plus a Windows Azure web role and SQL Azure integration. So we can now have everything we do with SharePoint hosted apps plus integration into Windows Azure web role and SQL Azure. So if you are building out highly transactional applications, you can do that by writing managed code on Windows Azure and using SQL Azure to use as the relational database at the back end. It gets better. We not only did the integration for you, when you install the apps, we auto-provision the Azure components for you. So as soon as you go and a user installs the app, we at the back end auto-provision the web role, SQL instance, and tie it up all together. It's completely transparent to the end user and even to the developers. So it makes it really easy to build apps on your local machine, push it up to the cloud, and on provisioning, we set up an Azure web role and SQL Azure for you. And it gets pretty tricky because if you look at it, we've got to update connection strings, we've got to send you to the right machine. We do all of this for you behind the scenes in an extremely transparent manner. The next thing is we are now in the cloud. We are running Office 365. We're going off to a separate machine, which is the Azure web role. How do we allow these remote apps to come back into SharePoint? How do we authenticate them? And in this case, we use something called as access control services. Has anyone worked with access control services? Yep. So it's basically an identity broker sitting up in the cloud, sitting up on Windows Azure platform. You can think of it as, the best way to explain it, think of it as ADFS in the cloud. And we set up the trust for you, so you can start leveraging this thing straight off the bat without requiring to configure any trust, you don't require to exchange any certificates. It's done for you. So how does the provisioning work? So how do we go and provision SQL Azure and the web roles for you? So what happens is when you build out a solution in Visual Studio, you can reference a web project and a database project. You can build and publish the app. You get something called as the .app file, which you can push up to the store or deploy it to your corporate catalog. And when a user installs this app, what SharePoint Online does is it basically rips open the package and looks for any web project. And if it finds a web project, it uses web deploy to actually push out that web project to SQL, to Windows Azure web role. How many people know about DACPack? Yeah, the DACPack is basically a way to package up SQL components. Visual Studio does that for you. If you include a DACPack file in your solution, we will go out and provision SQL Azure for you as well. Once the provisioning is done, we actually pick up the connection string, come back into the web role, and update the connection strings in your web.config. So as you're developing at design time or at development time, you do not know what the end connection string is going to be. So there's an app pattern which we need to follow, and I'll talk to you about that when we get into the demo. We spoke about ACS in the cloud. You know, ACS, it's identity broker sitting in the cloud. That's how apps authenticate back into SharePoint. And what we have essentially done is we use the OAuth protocol to authenticate apps back into SharePoint. And we picked OAuth because you can now develop applications in any technology. You are not bound to .NET. You can build application in PHP or Java. And OAuth is a pretty open standard, and you can, that's the reason we've used OAuth as a protocol to come back into SharePoint. And there is some interaction that happens behind the scene. I just want to walk you through, and we look at the raw deal in Fiddler in a while. And this is important because it helps you troubleshoot any authentication issues you might face once we see how the authentication happens behind the scene. So what happens is a request comes into SharePoint. Okay, SharePoint knows, okay, he's requesting an app. We bounce you off to ACS. ACS takes the user token and creates something called as the context token and sends that back to SharePoint. So the context token essentially is an encrypted key with the user, which site you want to go to, and a few other values, and it's sent back to the browser. The browser now goes out to the remote app, and it passes the context token to the remote app. When we provision the web app for you, we set up trust between the remote app, SharePoint Online, and ACS. So there are specific keys exchanged. The remote app basically takes one of those keys, goes out to ACS with a refresh token, and it gets something called as the access token back to it. And it's this access token that it uses to get back into SharePoint. Once it's gone back into SharePoint, it can request whatever data it requires, build up the page, and render it out to the user. I know there are a few arrows going on. We'll make this easier when we look at the demo. But it's important to know about the context token, the refresh token, and the access token. Whenever I talk about this, one of the things I keep getting asked is, can we cache any of this? Yes, you can cache it. The access token and the context token are much short-lived tokens, so around 12 hours. Whereas the refresh token can go up to 6 to 12 months. So if you don't want to keep bouncing the user, you can actually cache the refresh token and go back to ACS when you just require an access token back into SharePoint. So let's have a look at auto-hosted apps. What does the app know about the user? The app technically doesn't know a lot about the user because what happens is we have the app identity, and we have the user identity. So we now, especially in SharePoint, in the auto-hosted model, there's a policy which says you need to authorize something back into SharePoint. Both the user and the app needs to have enough permissions. So SharePoint does the authorization bit for you. The app technically doesn't know much about the user. Okay, so what I've done, I've actually provisioned an app previously into SharePoint Online, but we will do a live provisioning as well. But I just want to walk you through what sort of apps you can build, and then we get into having a look at how we go about building it. So I've logged into my SharePoint Online tenant. I'm logged in as Amy, and I've got an app called as the Kudos Employee Recognition. You just use this app to send recognition to colleagues based on any work they've done. So one of the first things you will notice is when I've clicked on the app, I'm going to get bounced off to Windows Azure. That's a web role running in Windows Azure. In the previous model, I got bounced off to an app web. In this case, I'm being sent off to Windows Azure. The app itself is pretty simple. I can type in names. It's going to go back into SharePoint, get me users whose name starts from A in this case. I'm going to pick Adam and go. It's brought me back Adam. going to say back end rocks. It rocks, doesn't it? That was pretty subdued. Okay, so I've just sent Adam a CUDA saying TechEd rocks. And if we jump back into the site, and I'm going to go have a look at the news feeds, which is the social capabilities in SharePoint, so Amy's news feed. And what you should be seeing is there's an item added to Amy's news feed saying TechEd rocks. Yeah. So we were sitting in Windows Azure. We managed to use JavaScript to look up the user without any async, without any post back. And then when we posted the page back, we've used the client-side APIs for user profile and social to write values back into SharePoint. What we're going to do now is I'm actually going to do a local debug to show you how the OAuth interaction works and how do we do a couple of other neat tricks within within SharePoint apps. I'm going to load up the solution. So that is a debug option as well. So if you want to debug an auto-hosted app, you can just go F5. It will deploy the app into Office 365, but it won't provision the Windows Azure web role for you. It will basically send you back to your local host, so you can essentially add a breakpoint and debug your code. So you can see in here, I'm deploying it to my SharePoint online tenant. We're going to go F5. It's going to take about a minute, but it has to uninstall, deprovision the previous bits, and reinstall the app. While this is getting done, I just want to ask you a quick question. In the previous demo, apps. Oh, it's already done the install. Sorry. But what I wanted to show you was when we typed in A, it did an asynchronous call back to SharePoint using JavaScript, and it pulled back the list of users. What is the general behavior of browsers when you try to post value from one domain to another domain on the internet? What happens? You get blocked, isn't it? For obvious reasons, you get blocked. But in this case, we were sitting in the Windows Azure Office 365 special web role, and we called out to SharePoint.com, which is technically a cross-domain call. So how did we do that? I'll let you chew on that while we come back. I'll show you how we did it. Okay, so this app's now provisioned in Windows Azure. It's asking me again, do you want to trust this app? I'm going to say, yep, trust it. Kudos recognition app, and now you'll see it's prompting me because I've got a local certificate, self-signed certificate. It's going to send me back to localhost, and I've got IIS Express running on my machine. That's actually hosting that site for me. What I wanted to show you now was the actual interaction from the ACS perspective. We looked at the pretty PowerPoint. Let's look at what happens in Fiddler, and hopefully this makes things much clearer. I'm just going to re-request that page. That didn't work. Page to come back. Okay. Now, if I jump back into Fiddler, what you should be seeing is as soon as I got sent off to SharePoint, yep, that's where I got redirected by SharePoint to my local host. The first thing we've done is we've gone out to access.windows. Accounts.accesscontrol.windows.net. That's the ACS hosted in Windows Azure. And we've asked back for some data. And you can see in this case we've sent a post message. And the result that we've got back comes back in JSON. And it says what are the allowed audiences? So in this case, it's my app and the user who's trying to get in. And more importantly, there's an encrypted token in there. That's the context token I was talking about. Who likes, by the way, who likes to look at encrypted context tokens? I would have been a bit worried if someone put their hand up. Okay, so we've got that token in there. And the next call that goes out is essentially from the app going back to ACS to say, give me back an access token. If I just pop up the web forms view in here, we've got the client ID, and we've got a refresh token. So the app has been able to extract the refresh token and send it off to ACS to essentially get back the access token. So we've gone out, give me the refresh token, and ACS sends back the access token, which is then used as a header to subsequent calls back into SharePoint. That's how SharePoint authorizes and authenticates the app coming back. It says, yep, that's a valid token. We trust each other. I'm going to let you in to make that call. So that's how the tokens behind the scene gets passed off. But the good news is, as a developer, you don't need to worry about all these things. Whenever you create an auto-hosted or a provider-hosted solution, we generate a helper file for you which takes care of all these things. But I would recommend in your own time to go through that class just to see what we do. If you want to change the implementation, feel free to do it, but you don't need to write code to actually support this authentication. Okay, I'm just going to get rid of some of this noise, jump back into the app itself. I left you with thinking about how did we do that cross-domain call? How did we jump from, in this case, localhost out to SharePoint.com? That's still a technically a cross-domain call. I'm going to go in, first of all, open up my dev tools just to show you how things happen. So we got one form in there.
Either JSONP or
Cause. Yeah?
JSONP or
Cause. I couldn't hear you.
Either JSONP or Cause.
I'll show you how we do that. I'm just going to type in A so to kick off the actual client-side call back to SharePoint. If I jump into Fiddler, you should start seeing the calls actually started going out asynchronously. The first thing you would see is it's called out to a page called as app proxy. And more importantly, it's a GET request. A page didn't refresh, and it successfully come back. Where is the page? So what we do is there's a client-side library called as the request executor that we've written, which essentially allows you to iframe in this trusted proxy page into your current page. So if I jump back into IE, go in there, refresh my HTML, should now see I've got an iframe in there whose target is the app web proxy. So the app web proxy is a page hosted within SharePoint, so every web can get to it, and that gets iframed into this page. If you jump back into Visual Studio and go into the actual class, in this case, we have requested the library to come down, so it's basically a JavaScript file, and once we have said the script has been successfully downloaded, we run a couple of lines of JavaScript to basically say, every time a client context call is made, intercept that call and send it, route it through the app web proxy. So from a developer's perspective, all you do is wire it up, and then the actual marshalling of call from your domain back into app web and back is done for you. So technically what happens is, if I go back into Fiddler, I've got back the page, and that's where I'm executing the query. If you see, I'm calling out into SharePoint, but the referrer in this case is from the same domain. So it's app web proxy that's actually making the call into SharePoint, getting the results back, and giving it back to you. So you technically are not making a cross-domain call. And this is important. This trick is important because when you build apps, especially with remote servers, not running in the same domain, you would need to use this library to get back into SharePoint. Otherwise, you're going to be blocked by a browser. Okay. I spoke about provisioning web roles and SQL Azure. Let's have a look at how we do that. We've got a simple app. All it does is manage URLs for a user. You can, and stores it in a SQL database. So that's my app. All it's got is an app manifest and an icon. But if you come look at the properties of this app, we've got these two settings that we can provide. And this is where you tell the app project to say, where is my web project, or which web project do I need to deploy, and where is my SQL package sitting? That's all you need to provide as a developer to the app package. Once this is provided, when we build out the project, we create the web deploy package for you, and we deploy out to SQL, deploy out to SharePoint Online. That's the SQL package basically pointing to the DACPAC file, so it's basically a binary file, and that contains the SQL schema and all supporting objects required to run up the database. If you need to run post-installation SQL scripts, you can provide the SQL data script as well, and that will be executed after the database has been created. So in many cases, you want to go populate a reference table as soon as the database is provisioned, you can do that. So in the previous demo, I did an F5 debug. In this case, I'm going to go right-click, deploy. What this is going to do is actually now spin up an Azure tenant and SQL Azure for me, and it's going to take a minute or so to do that. While that's happening, all the demos we saw, all the remote apps we were running, looked and felt like the SharePoint brand. How did that work? Did I add a reference back to the SharePoint CSS? Have I added custom styles in? And how do we do that? Because it's important when we're building apps, we want to look and feel like the SharePoint app. We don't want to look totally different. And to do that, there has been a new client control we've created called as the Chrome control, which essentially allows you to inherit the parent web's look and feel into your custom app. And it's just a couple of lines of JavaScript and some HTML, which allows you to do that without needing to register any server-side controls. And it works as you start changing themes on your SharePoint site. That change gets pulled in as well. I'm going to go trust this app. So in this case, what's happened is I've done a deploy. It's deployed my app in. I'm going to click through. And you would see I'm going to get sent off straight to Windows Azure again. So the provisioning has been done. Wait for that to come through. It's warming up the first time we hit a web server. If you look at the URL up at the top, that's running in Windows Azure. So it's provisioned in real time with just right-click deploy. I didn't have to do anything. I can go put in Bob, show me your favorite URLs. And a list of URLs have been pulled back, in this case, from a database. And if you look at the connection string, it's actually pointing out to SQL Azure database. I didn't have to change connection strings, nothing. There is a pattern developers need to follow to ensure you get the correct connection string. So currently, the recommendation is, in the web.config, we add a key called a SQL Azure connection string. So we're used to generally having the connection string element, but for auto-hosted app, the recommendation is to use the SQL Azure connection string in the app setting, and the provisioning engine will replace that during provisioning time. There's also a bit of guidance that will be released more towards GA, because we're working on geo-redundancies of databases. In those cases, we need to figure out which is the right connection string. So keep an eye out on MSDN blogs. You will see some more guidance coming out during general availability. So any questions regarding auto-hosted apps?
Can you specify instance, number of instances
and so that's still, we're still not, the guidance is still not out. On the scale-out model, basically, what you're asking, how do we scale up Windows Azure nodes and instances? That's still not out. But you do expect some information to come out from the team much closer to availability. Okay, we've spoken about auto-hosted apps. It is a really cool model, especially when you want to build apps for SharePoint Online. Now, if you had an online presence at the moment, you were pretty much left to sandbox solution, which was very restrictive. And also, all the source code, everything is available for download. So there are links in the deck itself, which you can use to download all the source code we've used for all the demos today and all the PowerShell scripts. So with auto-hosted model, we saw how we can use SQL Azure to provision stuff for us. With the S2S model, this is more for on-prem development. So we are out of the cloud, back on-prem within our data centers. And this model is to basically build high-trust applications behind the firewall. And when I mean high-trust applications, in the previous models, SharePoint authenticated the user and gave us the access token. Because now we are in a high-trust configuration, the remote app can assert any user's identity. So it's responsible for creating the access token. And that's why we call it as high-trust apps. So you can actually have a user who's not logged on. You can create an identity for him, send him in. SharePoint will trust that access and give you access into SharePoint. That's why we say these are high-trust apps. They're not full trust. They're still running in the same model off the box, but they are high-trust. With the auto-hosted model, we had the luxury of auto-provisioning, setting up of trust. We're back on-prem. We now need to bring our own infrastructure. So if you need to now take care of all the web servers, SQL Server instances have to be provisioned by you. Not only do we need to provision the infrastructure, we also need to take care of setting up the trust between the remote web and SharePoint. Has anyone tried setting up an S2S app? No one? Okay. I spoke to a few developers who have tried this, and they have not succeeded. So I want to show you how do you actually configure this correctly, and there's a script as well which I'll walk you through. And unfortunately, this needs to be done for every app you install on your environment. So you need to run that configuration bit for every app you install, because every app has to be trusted independently of each other. So what does it take to configure S2S? Basically, what we need to do is start off with the prereq. So the app isolation model needs to be configured, which we looked at in the SharePoint hosted model. That needs to be configured. In the current build that's out, so the preview build that's available for download, you need to go change a registry key called as the app principal check, and you need to set the value to 0. That, by default, is for the online version. In the current build, you need to change it manually. So I've seen many developers not changing that and not being able to authenticate back into SharePoint. Now, I had my own learnings, which I'll share with you, but just make sure that that's done. Second thing, you need to have a private-public certificate pair so we can set up the trust. If you're used to setting up trusts in a SharePoint Federated Services model, it's the same model. Then we need to generate something called as a client ID. Like everything in SharePoint, it's a GUID. But this GUID is special. And this GUID is special. Did anyone think GUIDs could be special? I didn't either. This GUID is special because you need to ensure that all alphabets in that GUID is lowercase. It's a really weird requirement, but it needs to be lowercase. If not, you're going to get a 401 unauthorized when you try to get back into SharePoint. I spent 3 days trying to sort this out. And then I just went and wrote a small console app which basically does a 2 lower on my string, and I chucked that GUID in. I'll share that app if you want. Once that client ID is generated, the next thing we need to do is set up something called as a trusted security token issuer. So this basically authenticates the app coming in. Users don't use this to authenticate. They use something else. But this is a single-line PowerShell commandlet we need to run to set it up. Finally, we register the app principal so that we can permission the app properly. And then we need to have 2 things set up. Who likes user profile services? Who can provision it the first time? Okay, see a few hands. Okay, hands go down. Okay. There is a reliance on user profile services for S2S apps. So what we do is because the user identity is created outside of SharePoint, we use the user profile to validate and rebuild the identity once the calls come into SharePoint. So it's necessary for any user whose identity we are asserting, there is a user profile in SharePoint. And then finally, in the web.config of a remote app, you need to specify certain keys, which I'll show you, and you need to provide the path to the certificate and the certificate signing password. And that's simple setting up trust between the remote app. So when the actual remote app signs something, SharePoint can actually decrypt it and validate that's correct. So let's get into demo mode and have a look at high trust apps. The first thing we need to ensure for high trust apps is same thing, the app manager. Oh, I didn't flick over. Is the app management service and setting services running. That's a prerequisite, so you don't need to keep doing that for every app. But once that's done, we essentially jump into PowerShell to configure S2S app. I've basically simplified this PowerShell to take all the noise from logging and error handling just to show you guys what we need to do. So you start off with getting a reference to the SP web object, and that SP web is basically the site you're going to deploy your app to. We then go and get something called as the authentication realm for your site, which is nothing but another GUID. In SharePoint Online, the authentication realm is unique for every tenant. On-premise, it's unique farm-wide. So if you have multiple farms, the realm will change per farm, but all apps within a farm itself will have the same realm. We get a reference to the certificate, and then we generate something called as the app identifier. And the pattern recommended is basically the special GUID, the lowercase GUID at the realm. So that's basically just a unique string we use to identify the app. And then we use the SP trusted security token issuer commandlet to actually set up the trust. In SharePoint 2010 and 2013, there is also a commandlet which is very close to this. It's called as SP Trusted Identity Token Issuer. And that basically allows you to set up authentication providers for users. And you see that when you go down to authentication providers against your web app, you see it in there. You will not see this. This is a hidden thing just for your app to authenticate. Users are authenticated using trusted identity provider. In this case, apps are authenticated using the security token issuer. Once that's done, we register the app principal. We basically say, this is the app principal. It's registered with the site, so we can actually permission the app. And this is a tip for developers. OAuth requires HTTPS. So if you do not have a valid certificate, you can turn off OAuth, the requirement to have HTTPS during development. However, when you move on to production, make sure you flick it back on. So that's all it takes to actually set up or configure an S2S app from a SharePoint perspective. So what I've done with the actual remote app in this case is I've said instead of using an ASP.NET web forms app, let's raise the bar a bit and go ASP.NET MVC. So in this case, the remote app is actually an ASP.NET MVC app that SharePoint talks to. And I've gone, it's a layered app, so we've got a database tier that uses entity framework to talk back to the database. We've got a services layer which exposes out a WCF services which the controllers call into. So it's the full shebang from a design perspective. If you look into the web.config, I'm just going to zoom in. We've got a section in here that we need to populate for every app that you develop. We just need to provide the client ID, the special GUID. We need to provide the client certificate. So the certificate we've used to sign, we need to provide the full path to it and the password for the signing. So that when the app actually fires up, it uses the token helper again to create the access token, it can be signed properly. I've not tested that, but I think it needs to be an absolute path. And if you've got multiple servers, you need to configure it on all servers. Yeah. Okay, so I'm just going to go F5 and run this app, and we'll have a look at what this app does. So this is just to show you that we can use other technologies other than web forms to actually build apps. So if you're comfortable building apps in PHP, you can go for it. If you want, in this case, I've picked MVC. I'm just going to go set the permissions on this. So that's the Contacts Manager app. I'm going to click into it. And you should now see the IIS Express firing up my service layer and my MVC app. It's a very simple app, allows me to manage contacts. Every time I add a contact, it adds an announcement back into SharePoint. I'm going to click in, go add. Simple form. Oh, actually, before that, we've got the state dropdown in this. And what I've done is I've actually, at runtime, I'm going back into managed metadata store through the client and pulling out the states that I've configured. So let's go back into the service app itself and have a look at the actual term set. So I've got the contacts term set with states in them. As usual, I've missed out Tasmania. I'm going to add that in. And hopefully in a couple of secs, when I refresh this page, it should come back with... No, it hasn't. Let's do a refresh. With Tasmania. So it's in real time going back to managed metadata service using the managed client API to pull out those values. Just to show you that we can integrate with SharePoint. I'm going to fill the form out. Okay, there you go. And what I want to show you is what happens when I submit this form. Another quick tip, if you're using ASP.NET MVC as the project type, for some reason the project doesn't get attached to the debugger, so you need to manually attach. I'm going to attach to the IIS Express. Oh, I can see the breakpoints come alive. So I'm going to go submit the request, and it's... I put a breakpoint in there because in this case, what I want to show you is I'm actually creating the identity for a different user. I've used the UPN of this user, of Adam, and created a Windows identity for him, just a standard.NET code. And then I've gone out to the token helper class and said, get me a token for this user. The token gets generated. I'm just using getting a reference to the announcements list and adding an item into the announcements list. So it's added in. If I go have a look, yep, it's added in. Let's jump back into the site and have a look at the announcements list. You should now see that an announcement has been created a few seconds ago. Just a quick trivia. When I do view item on this, who would be the user who has created this item? I've created the identity for Adam. I'm logged on as an administrator. Whose identity is going to show up? Any guesses? The app? The app pool? So system/. Anyone else? We spoke about app identities. So when we actually look at the identity for that, it actually says it's been created by Contacts Manager on behalf of Adam Barr. So this is where we started the session of talking about apps now have unique identities separate from the user. This is a demo showing how we segregate between the app and the demo and the user. Shows you that from a traceability perspective, you know it's been done by this app, but for this user. So if you do have batch processes where you want to write things back into SharePoint based on specific users, you can do that behind running as a Windows service, calling into SharePoint as a HITRUST app. Any questions regarding HITRUST apps?
No.
Because we can't set the trust up with them. Authentication of the app, not the user. So you can't authenticate users using OAuth. It's only for the app. Yep, yes. So it's basically, it follows the OAuth protocol, and it's documented on the OAuth site. Also, the token helper class. So if you look into the actual Visual Studio solution, I'm just going to stop this. Oh, I didn't want to turn on SQL. So Visual Studio Solution. We've got the token helper class. And that class is basically has the implementation of getting these tokens. So it's a pretty open standard. You can use that as a reference to write your own class if you need to. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So the installing, you have to do it. The token helper ensures it can create the access tokens correctly. So you don't need to write code to actually create those tokens. The token helper takes care of that for you. Let's flick back to the demo. We've got, I think, around 10 minutes left. I think we're pretty much on time. Let's quickly go through what we have seen. We've gone through a lot of demos, a lot of content. I just want to make sure that we understand how app identities work in SharePoint. So we spoke about how they are independent of the user and how we can permission them. We went through demos where we saw the app demanding permissions for separate services, and we could manage the access level to it. We then looked at SP-hosted solutions. How do we provision SP-hosted solutions? We looked at the external content type provisioning. We looked at Visual Studio and the tooling that comes with it. We then moved on to auto-hosted. This is a really cool model. I think that's my personal favorite, just because of the technology magic it does behind the scenes. And we looked at how it provisions Windows Azure and SQL Azure to actually start building highly transactional and serious apps even for online solutions. You're no longer restricted by the sandbox. And then we finally wrapped things up with the S2S model. And what I would like to say about the S2S model is this is where I think most developers are going to be building apps to start off with, behind the firewall. Till people start moving to the cloud, this is going to be the model along with the SP-hosted model that you start off with. Once you have users migrating to the cloud, you would start writing the auto-hosted model. But feel free, as an ISV, you know, if you want to target different markets, you can start using auto-hosted model, and it's available as part of the preview. The final thing I would like to say is please go out to dev.office.com. It's an awesome site. There is tons and tons of content, sample code. There's documentation on everything we have spoken about today. There are links in the document, in the deck as well, which go out to some of these sites. And there are links in the document, which in the deck, which will be available, I think, probably next week. I'm not sure. Which points out to the source code we've used throughout the demo. Some of the PowerShell scripts, I'll make it available on my blog next week. I'm talking about that. And you all can go download it from there. If you have not attended the previous SharePoint sessions, it will be available as a recorded video on Channel 9 MSDN. Please do go watch the introduction to SharePoint and the app model for Office and SharePoint. It gives you a good grounding in the overall platform changes for SharePoint 2013. I will be available at the productivity showcase and the premiere booth for the rest of the day, so feel free to come have a chat. And that's my blog address, blogs.msdn.com/b/sham. I'm .NET Bounce on Twitter. You can also hit me up on OSP433 with any questions. I will make sure I return answers. And most importantly, please do put your evals in. We take it very seriously. You are going, probably every speaker has told you this, that you can win a mouse. But more importantly, it's to make sure that when we come back next year, we can provide you with better sessions and really take the feedback on board. So please do put your evals in. So I'm going to open up the rest of the session for any questions. So, yep.
How do you update content type between deployed in one of these applications?
Yep.
It's not normally recommended to change the camel after deploying.
So there is a mechanism which allows you to do the actual update of content type. I know the recommendation is not to change the content type, but that's why we have an isolated model. The content types we deploy, it's going to target a specific isolated app web and not the entire platform. So the effect of changing content types is not going to have a ripple effect across the farm. It's a much reduced surface area.
But if you provision a list along with your application,
yep. Yep.
So normally you have to, uninstall, reinstall the feature if you want this, and then reactivate it if you want it to happen. So how does that work with the app? How does it automatically?
So what you can do is you can actually use the app installed handler. So there's a handler that your app can call into saying, I've installed the app. Do you want to do some post-processing after that? And you can then go in there, come back through the client object model, and update your list to add that column in or drop the content type and add it back again. So do you have certain options where you can actually get called out and do those works externally? So those, unfortunately, you can't write feature receivers, you know, or write PowerShell to actually go update the content type. So you have to rely on the external remote event receivers model to come back into SharePoint to do some cleanup work after upgrades. Yep.
How workflows are you meant to work in this
app model? Sorry, I couldn't get you. I couldn't hear you, sorry. Oh, yeah, workflow, yeah. So there is workflows you can provision using the app model. So if you go into the Visual Studio tooling, you can actually start creating new workflows. But if you have some serious workflows, the recommendation is to go off to the workflow management service, which is the Windows Azure App Fabric workflow management service, and leverage that. But, yes, you can build workflows using the app model.
So you can write code server-side code in your app?
You basically write code server-side. And you can have workflows call into them. So you can't write code on SharePoint server. You can write it on a remote server. So essentially, your business logic can be written on a remote server, and your workflows can call into them.
So your app just calls those workflows that you have on the server.
Yeah.
So I see you deploy workflow on the server.
Oh, not on the SharePoint server. You deploy it on a remote server.
And so your remote server can be anything, right?
It can be anything. Yeah, it can be a SharePoint server if you want, but probably you shouldn't be doing that. It beats the purpose, but it could be anything. And you can do declarative workflows as well. Yep.
Do you have a client object model? You already mentioned that JavaScript. Can we use a C-sharp one?
You can use C-sharp and the Silverlight one.
As
long as it's client object model. The server object model is still available. It's not gone. It's still there. You can still build full-form solutions and deploy them into SharePoint. That's still supported. But the client object model has now been extended, so the reliance on server object model can be reduced. And yeah, it's available for across the JavaScript, the .NET, and Silverlight models.
Is that
the JavaScript model, client object model?
Yep.
More resource on
that? So that's actually a very good question. Unfortunately, there isn't a lot of resources on that. So if you actually go to the site, it says that documentation is in progress. So I'm assuming that over the next couple of months, you will see more content coming out. And it basically references. Yeah, have you? There is a lot of documentation out there. So the JavaScript documentation out there basically says, look at the client object model, the managed APIs, and basically try and replicate that back in JavaScript. So your properties have become get and set methods. And so it's the same methods you can call from JavaScript as well. So it's the same consistent calls, but there is no substantial documentation on how do you use all the different models, all the different API surfaces.
Those CSOM DLLs and scripts, so they're shipped with Visual Studio, or you should grab them?
No, so that's a good question. You need to grab them from SharePoint, and more importantly, when you build your application, you need to ensure the DLLs are marked to be copy local. Because when you pick up a web project and deploy it remotely, you need to ensure those DLLs are copied across. Otherwise, you won't have DLL not found exception when you run the app. So you need to ensure that as you pick add references, the DLLs are set to be copied locally. Yes?
So with the new app models, under what circumstance or in which models are we still going to require an IIS reset or an interruption on the SharePoint?
None. So
with your S2S, you said you had to edit the web config.
So that's... But it's running on a separate box. So the SharePoint server itself.
Oh, so it's not the SharePoint.
It's not the SharePoint. Yeah. Right. It's the app. So SharePoint itself will not, you don't need to do an IIS reset. And that's the best part. During the entire building process, I didn't do IIS reset even once. So, and that's where I said, if we tie it together too tightly, it's hard to manage both of them. In this case, I can do an IIS reset on my web servers and get away with it with SharePoint being available. Yes? Oh, I've got no idea about that. Talking 2010. You're talking, moved on to 2013. Any other questions? Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Should we be holding off a bit? Because,
oh, that's... I think, to be really honest, it's you need to look at if you want to do development in SharePoint 2010, and if it's a requirement that you need to deploy it straight away, then you need to go with the old model. But what I would do is understand the app model. So when if you are building full trust solutions in 2010, you can start planning about how can I start decoupling it from SharePoint. So if I do need to move it to the app model, how easy it's going to be. There will be still a bit of work involved, but a bit of planning up front and having a good appreciation for the app model will help reduce the amount of rework you need to do to move to the app model. No. I would tell you, yes, move to the app model now, but it comes down to a few parameters.
Timing.
Yeah, timing is probably one of them. Yes?
There's a lot of talk that you can build app with using other technologies like PHP or Java, but how can you actually build an app without using these tools from you?
Ah, so for example, if you're using Java, you can use the Eclipse engine, which is like an IDE for Java.
How do you read the app package?
The app package. So technically, you don't need to build the app package using Eclipse. So what you can do in the app manifest, what we actually say is we don't put the actual app into the app manifest. All we are saying is here is the URL for the app. That's all we are saying. So when you go down the path of Java or PHP, it will be the developer's responsibility to deploy the custom app.
How do you build the .app file?
You'll have to come back to Visual Studio to build the .app file. Yeah. Can use Visual Studio. You can't, technically you can't build it, but you know, the app itself can be built. It's just a zip file, you can open it up. Yeah. But I'm not sure whether it signs anything, so it does it do a checksum check. I'm not very sure about that. So yeah, it's just a compressed file. Yeah. But for example, if you look at the MVC app, all the app file has got is one XML file in it, which says here is the URL for my app. That's all it's got. So we'll put up a video which says how to use Visual Studio for non-.NET developers. Any other questions? Thanks, guys. Hopefully have a good time at TechEd.